latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse with opening day of the L.A. County Fair meet set for Friday, December 4th. The meet will feature five exciting stakes races, headed by the Starlet on Saturday, December 5th, and the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. Recent winners of the Los Alamitos Futurity include the outstanding multiple stakes winners Improbable and Thousand Words. On weekdays, our first post will be at 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. Watch and wager on all of the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers and at open satellite locations. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of the Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day, Friday, December 4th. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, coming up on a couple of minutes before 10 o'clock, hour two on this weekend preview. The great remix of K-Star. We will get to one of our other favorite K-Star cuts, which is her version of Everybody's Waiting for the Man with the Bag. K-Star, fabulous. Wheel of Fortune. If you don't know K-Star, you should. You know Dave Greinig, though. Everybody knows Dave Greinig. Joins us now from the backstretch at Belmont Park. Dave, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. And we're on the cusp of, I guess, some rotten weather, just in time for Cigar Mile Day.
Yeah, unfortunately, they've been pretty lucky all fall, and it looks like their luck's about to run out for tomorrow. A lot of rain on the way, and I think it will have an impact on the, especially the Cigar Mile. I think two, pretty decent horses, Friends Fire and Mind Control, very good possibility they would come out of that race. Neither one of them has shown their connections or propensity to handle a sloppy track, and, I guess what they say, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I think these two trainers, Kelly Breen and Greg Sacco, are no longer insane. I think if it looks like it's a bad track come 3:44 tomorrow or 4:13 tomorrow, I think you'll find those two maybe at Gulfstream in a couple of weeks. But you never know. The weather forecasts have been wrong. Weather forecasters have known to be wrong before, so you never know.
Well, and, Firenze Fire, headed to a stud career, and this, I think so, right? At Pleasant Acres, I believe.
Ron Lombardi, I didn't see that. Ron Lombardi told me he was running them next year.
I thought I had seen that there were hints that, I suppose that may have been... That may have been tied potentially to maybe to this race could be. Maybe there was some conditional elements that I that's speculation on my part. But
okay.
All right. Well, either way, I mean, if that's the case, he'll be around.
He could wind up there when it's all said and done. I just don't think it's all said and done this year. I guess there's always the potential he could run a few times at Gulfstream next year. In the wintertime, there's a lot of races. There's at least three that he mentioned to me that are possibilities if they don't run here. And then I guess they could go later in the year. So I guess that's, but I got the impression talking to Ron that he wants to run them all next year. And why not? I mean, if you can make another Breeders' Cup, that would be what, 5 straight years, the Breeders' Cup, and it's at Del Mar next year. Why wouldn't you want to try and get a little California, a little California dream in there?
Well, why not? All right. You mentioned the Breeders' Cup, and of course, he comes out of the sprint if he's going to participate, as does Bon Raison for Jack Sisterson. And Sisterson peppered the box with both Bon Raison and True Timber. We had Randy Hill on the other morning. He was paying tribute to his friend and stable manager, Billy Price, and he surprised us with the news that George was entertaining Majestic Dunhill for the race, and then lo and behold, there he was, when they opened the box on Wednesday.
Yeah, a bit surprising to me, too. I had him crossed off after he ran so poorly in the fall high weight, and I guess the fact that he ran so poorly in the fall high weight was, it's almost like he didn't run at all. So I guess they said, you know what? I remember talking to George before they opted for the fall high weight and said, I'm really not sure what way to go, shorten them up or go long. So I guess shortening up didn't work out. So he figured maybe I'll try him going long. He has run well on an off track. I guess, I don't know. He's 2 for 3 on a wet track. And the one bad race is the 4-go. And I don't know what you would call that track. That would almost look like the a river that day. That was beyond sloppy. That was... that was a type of track, 4-go day, that if it wasn't 4-go day, they might have actually canceled, in my opinion.
Well, that would have been too bad for Win-Win-Win and Mike Trombetta. I saw the funniest thing the other day. In fact, somebody had put up a poll. What has been your favorite race? What has been your favorite race of 2020? And I saw Mike Trombetta said the 4-go, and I so I wrote back. You're a homer. That answer. The fix was in. It obviously this is a bit of an unusual cast that came together for this, Dave. I mean, performer in a lot of ways. Shug is on what feels like a real pronounced tear, by the way. Performer feels like a very important spot for him. And then you got a horse like Snapper Sinclair turning up off of those turf races. You've got stretch outs, you got turn backs, Mr. Buff. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. And then there's the return of King Guillermo, who, sadly missed a chance at the Derby and other assignments. And this becomes a big race opportunity for him.
Yeah, I guess this is the eclectic, this is where you can throw in the eclectic cast, because you do, like Snapperson, like Majestic Dunhill, I had no idea Snapper Sinclair was ever even entertaining this race, and he hasn't won all year. In fact, overall, the whole group is like 12 for 52, and I think three of those wins come from, like, Bon Raison in, like, claiming races or something like that, so, and actually, that's not true, he's got one win. It's a weird group, and it's been a weird year for a lot of horses, a lot of everything. But a performer, this time last year, a performer was getting a break after winning the Discovery, and they were really looking forward to a 4-year-old campaign that was going to start in April in the Carter, and then the Met Mile, and might have shown up in races like the Whitney, and he might have been a horse that people were talking about for the Breeders' Cup as we got to the end of the year. Then 2020 came in, and this is his second start of the year, and I really don't know if we know how good Performer is. And I'm not even sure we'll know, unless he runs off the screen tomorrow, how good he is, because if the wet track, impacts that race or not. I think next year we'll know how good Performer is if he can get a normal year. But his comeback race was solid. He ran a solid 1:33.4 going a mile. It wasn't obviously wasn't the roughest cast he's ever faced. And actually, he hasn't faced much at all. If you wanted to, Grump's Little Tots and Pain are like the best horses he's run against. So I can see where people can raise an eyebrow about, well, why do I want to take a short price on Performer? In what's going to be, he's got the rail, he's got the wet track, and some horses in here potentially, if they stay in, the toughest ones he's ever met. But if you don't go to Performer, and if Forensfire and Mind Control do come out, I'm not sure where you go. I'm sorry, I know that there's a nice story with King Guillermo and the baseball player and the $99 win or the $100 win mutual at the Tampa Bay Derby and whatnot, but, I mean, we're asking him to come in off a six-month layoff and take on older horses in the slop at a track he's never been to before and, you know, cutting back a one-turn mile. I mean, I'm not sure what and then, you know, I talked to Juan Avila the other day. He said to me, 2 weeks before the Kentucky Derby, this horse was 100% top of his game. He says, right now he's good, but he's not as good as he was then. So to me, in order for him to compete against in a grade one against older horses, you have to be better than you were then. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of King Guillermo. And then there's the anomalies, or the enigma, I should say, in Mr. Buff, a horse that can run lights out when there's a, you know, a little S with and a box around it, and he doesn't run at all when there's a name and a grade next to it. And it's just amazing that the, you know, it's not so much that he has to win those races, but show up, perform, do something. And he just runs and he gets passed and then he just spits the bit. And I don't know, maybe it's being at Aqueduct. Well, he loves Aqueduct. Maybe a wet track. He liked a wet track. Being in front, should be in front. But I can't trust Mr. Buff just given his past performances in these type of spots. So I wound up back at Performer, thinking that, you know what, I take a little bit of exception with the, you know, the characterization that Shug is on a tear. He's won a couple of stakes races, which make it look a little better. But, you know, for the meet, he's like 3 or 4 for 20-something. And I know, I guess he got his fourth win yesterday with Dreams of Tomorrow. And now it is a little bit notable that Dreams of Tomorrow was the workmate 2 works back with Performer. He was sort of the target that Performer had. So that was that's a good sign. I believe that was the November 28th work, which was in the mud, by the way. So, I don't know. I think Performer is potentially a very good horse. I don't know that we've actually had the documentation to prove that, but maybe that'll come tomorrow.
One quick note on the pace part of this involving Mr. Buff. Kendrick Carmouche gets back aboard True Timber, and the assumption, you know, given his participation in nothing but, you know, authentic sprints, True Timber is going to be part of this pace, and Mr. Buff is not going to, you know, be out there alone, I don't think.
So True Timber is the rabbit for Ball and Raison?
I wouldn't say that, but I don't know if Jack wants to approach it that way. I mean, Carmouche, you know, you look at the Vosburgh and the Forgo. I mean, the Vos went in 45-2 and 44-3 in the Forgo, and in the Forgo he was basically, you know, pressing for the lead and got the lead, in fact, at second call, and that's faster than Mr. Buff is going to go.
I see that, but I just don't know that the horse has really been successful with that maneuver. Like, I think, you know, he's been second in this race at 30-1. He's been third in this race at 30-1, and typically they were, you know, off the pace type of moves. And now I understand what you're saying, and maybe, and I guess, you know, look, it's the last race of the day. It's going to be all dirt probably before that. I know they have one turf race scheduled. I can't see that happening. And I guess you get an idea of how the track is playing at that point in time. And if it looks like speed is good, then I can see your point. I actually think, and I'm not saying that he's fast enough, but if you look back, the 2 races recently that Majestic Dunhill has had success were when he was into the race. And I know the pace in the Bold Ruler was 47, but the one in the allowance race at Belmont was 45-4, and that's kind of the type of pace that, you know, Mr. Buff is probably capable of setting, and I could see Majestic Dunhill getting gigged away from there and getting into the race a little bit.
Interesting.
Because of those two races that, you know, he got beat a neck, and then he won the Bold Ruler when he was close to the pace. I don't totally disagree with your, you know, anytime Kendrick's on a horse, you're automatically assuming he's going to be forwardly placed, but I don't know. I just don't know if that's the way that horse has his most success.
It's an interesting group. Rosario is going to obviously have to gain some early position too, leaving the chute with Performer. But he's got, he's got natural gate speed anyway, so that doesn't seem like that's an issue. And we'll see how, we'll see how forward they go. You've got to feel like he'll be, sitting no worse than third early on. It's a intriguing situation. I hope that Mind Control and Firenze Fire can participate, because without them, it's a little less engaging. Dave, yeah, let's talk. I was going to shift gears to the 2-year-olds. And speaking of Shug, and Kelly Breen, they obviously the bookends in this thing with Pick and Time on the rail and 10 for 10. 10 for 10 sure feels like, a controlling speed or loose leader.
I think it's potential. Yeah, that is potential. And he did have his one big race in the slop, the maiden win. He won at Belmont when he did control things. I just didn't like his last race. He had the rail and he went out there and he chased the horse or was in front of the horse that Kathy Ripto had sent up here to isolate. And I just didn't like the way his action was in the stretch. He was late changing leads. Have he changed at all? Now, granted, that was Ken Sell made that decision, I guess, to go on with it. He's got back with Jose Ortiz now and knows him a little bit better, probably, as having been on him twice with a win and a second. And I guess the other question is, and I think Shug has the question, too, in his mind, at least what he's expressed to me, is does he really want to go that far? And I think that's sort of key in these 2-year-old mile and eighth races in December, November, December. It's who, it may not be the best horse moving forward, but it's who wants to go this far at this time of year. And I think we do know that Known Agenda wants to go this far. Now, he didn't run very fast when he won that race, the maiden race on November 8th. That weekend, it seemed like the track and the kickback was inhibiting a lot of things that the opening weekend here. And you can go back into some past Remsens, too. I think Honor Code, I think, won the Remsen, and even maybe Mohamed in times that were just so slow that you're like, hard to believe. And they turned out to be pretty solid horses moving forward. Known Agenda, I guess the interesting thing, or there's two interesting things with me for Known Agenda. One is the fact that in that race that he beat Greatest Honor in after getting past and coming back, they were 21 lengths clear of the rest of the field. You very rarely see that. And then the debut, he was second to Highly Motivated, who came back and won the Nyquist Stakes for Chad Brown at the Breeders' Cup weekend in a nice manner with a high buyer speed figure. So I think Known Agenda, even though he's coming out of just the maiden ranks and hasn't had the stakes experience, he's run against a couple of nice horses. I think that Greatest Honor for Shug could be okay as well. I think maybe the most interesting horse in here is the one that, it'll be probably the fourth choice, is Brooklyn Strong, the New York bred for Danny Velasquez, who won the Sleepy Hollow by 2.25 lengths. And I think this horse wants to go two turns. I actually think this horse will stretch out. He's by Wicked Strong out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare. I think he'll handle the two turns. And I know he loses Ortiz to 10 for 10, but he picks up Rosario, which is not a bad thing at all. And I know he's stepping out of open company or stepping out of state breds. Oh, look, he won a maiden 40 at Delaware, kind of got away with that. But he interests me a little bit just on the experience and the fact that the way he finished that last race, I think he does want to go further.
How about the girls' race? Ended up with a fuller field and a little bit more of a diverse set of horses too. From a stallion standpoint, Curlin certainly dominating the entry box. Three Curlin fillies line up.
Yeah, and to me, it's between two of them: Malathot, an obvious odds-on favorite, and Millie. I'm going to call it Millie Philly because I think that's what they call it in the barn. And I know you think you have. I think somewhere along the line, I saw somewhere, maybe it was on your site, that you have the actual right pronunciation. But I like Millie Philly, so that's where I'm going to go with it right now.
Millie Philly is cute.
She was impressive with the 4-length victory in the maiden ranks. But, I mean, Malathot, to me, has been impressive in both of her starts. And I think she's going to be very tough to beat, I think. Malibu Curl, the third Curlin, I just find it a bit of a tall task to come in off a 3-month layoff off the 1/7/8, you know, the second two races, but the 7/8 race. I don't know that this is what they were actually looking for when they were looking to bring her back. But I could be wrong on that, but I actually thought they were looking at maybe coming, you know, starting back in Florida. But we'll see if she stays in. But to me, those three kind of stand out over the rest. Cafe Society, I know Shug wasn't really thrilled with the trip he got if she got under Cancel the last time, and she should stretch out. I'm just not sure. I don't know that she's ready to make up all that much ground. All the 10 lengths needed to make up on Malifat at this point in time.
Well, this, you know, until you just said it, it didn't occur to me that that John Embriel has the potential for, you know, some real interesting, you know, stretch call if there's a battle involved here with Malifat and Milfay. This could turn into a clock stopper, ghost zapper situation. Maybe my favorite of the Durkin stretch calls, one that doesn't get I don't know if you can find the video anymore of that one, but you remember the clock stopper, ghost zapper at Saratoga in the allowance?
I don't.
Oh, my God. Tremendous. And Durkin, who celebrated a birthday the other day, clock stopper, ghost zapper, clock stopper, ghost zapper. Back and forth. It's an absolute corker. And I've looked for the race online, and I cannot find it. So if anybody's got that forgotten classic, it has to be forgotten for you not to remember that, because
that one's had to be 0304. Your tax in my brain for last week, no last 17-16 years ago.
Who else in here has got any kind of a look? Here's Shug again for Joe Allen with the Empire Maker Filly Cafe Society, which is a great name for a horse, and you know, then you got a couple of outsiders. I love Mitch Friedman taking a swing in here with Karamoka.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I don't know if that'll be 99-1 again, so, but it'll be close. She'll be dismissed in this spot. I don't know. I think the Dollar Mountain, just because she's won in the slop before, maybe. I'm not sure. I think
it could be.
I'd be hard pressed to get past the 3+. Even Shug. To me, I'd have a hard time getting past the top two, but I guess Dollar Mountain bears some respect, just the fact that she's shown the ability to handle an off track before, and she was, you know, going a distance of ground.
Well, the Demoiselle and the Remsen for the 2-year-olds testing the 9-furlong distance, and we should slip in too that the Gopher Wand on Saturday, the 1-mile standard, the grade 3, and I didn't really look at this that closely, to be honest, Dave.
Yeah, it's not the greatest Gopher Wand they'll ever run, but it won't be a memorable running. And I'm not a Madeline is your morning line 4-5 favorite, and that just, I think that's all you need to know if she's 4-5. I actually find her to be more effective around 2 turns, but she was just awful in the turn back the alarm. I guess if she runs her Lady's Secret back, she could win that. I mean, I guess the interesting horse is, because it's like, where did this performance come from? Is Sharp Star, the New York bred for Horacio DePass and Barry Schwartz? Money's 3-year-old filly was just running so-so numbers and so-so performances, and then she shows up on opening weekend at Aqueduct with a 15¾ length blitz and a 101 buyer speed figure. I guess allowing her room to bounce and still win. I don't know. She's 2-for-2 at a mile, the one turn mile, which is what this race is. I think she has a wet track pedigree. She's got Jose Ortiz. It's just a matter of, where did that race come from? Was it more so her running against a bad group? Is it her finally getting the light bulb to come on? I don't know. You can't get that excited about what her price will be, because she'll probably be the second choice. This is a hard race to me to, point anybody in the right direction. Maybe Portal Creek. Portal Creek comes in for Juan Carlos Guerrero in good form. Not sure what she's been facing down at Parks. She's got a good record. She has won victory on a wet track, although I don't know when that was, because it wasn't the most recent start. She probably offered the most value. You got your boy Kendra Carmouche on there, who's going to probably put her in front. I don't know where else to go. The other ones to me look, Graceful Princess, a great pedigree with minimal talent. So, I'd probably say Chalky, maybe giving Portal Creek a shot as the potential upsetter just because she's in form.
Well, and of course, this race, the Gopher Wand, originally known as the Mascot, named for the Hall of Fame turn of the century filly that was exceptional, and James Keene product. And I think that the Mascot was a grade one at one time, was it not?
I believe it was, and if you remember, though, this used to be the from the timing standpoint of the year, so I believe this was the Top Flight. They used to run the Top Flight around this at the end of the year. You see that Friday race after Thanksgiving, and then they moved things around, and I got rid of that one, and they moved to Gopher Wand from like Saratoga to here. So it's not the same race. I think they just fooled around with the names and kind of they dropped one. And they've kept the Gopher Wand, but I believe they, between the first flight and the Top Flight, we've grounded all those flights right now. So,
Gopher Wand herself, of course, won this race in 1990, and the list of winners you go back is pretty august. Lady Secret.
But again, remember the Gopher Wand that those winners were winning races that weren't really this race.
Right. That's fair. That's fair.
I mean, they were winning the mile. They were winning, I believe it was a two-turn race in Saratoga, if I'm not mistaken. And then, again, they started kind of moving things around, and they dropped one, and then they just, for name's sake, they kept this one and moved it to the, like I said, it used to be the last weekend in November. This year it didn't really work out for them. And it's weird how I think, last weekend at Churchill Downs got more horses out of the Breeders' Cup than this weekend at Belmont or Aqueduct, and they kind of moved these races back, hoping that they could get some horses out of the Breeders' Cup to come here. And I'm not really sure why all those two-year-olds opted for those races that they did at Churchill last weekend between the allowances and the Golden, Jockey Club, Kentucky Jockey Club, and nobody took a look at this race, bothered to reach out and say, hey, what do you got in that race? Because it's really, it's not super strong, and it's certainly, with only five horses, it's, good spot to get a great stakes place and those coveted Derby points.
That's right. That's right. Dave, on Sunday, you mentioned the turf situation. As it happens, all of next week, I was shocked when the overnight came out yesterday that some of the races that had been in the book and had been potentially extras for the weekend were brought back for Thursday. That included a number of turf races, and there had been rumors that Sunday was going to be the last day of turf, but it's going to be clear and dry in the 50s all next week, and it looks like the racing office is going to try to get some more turf races in Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I think so. I think they did a smart, very smart maneuver by not carting any turf for Sunday, and I guess they carted one for yesterday, I guess, because they had to make 10 and, making 10 dirt races in December is almost impossible. But they had 9 and some MTOs, and they took, like you said, the turf races that were scheduled for Sunday, put them as extras, and if the weather allows, I didn't see 50s next week, but, I saw dry weather. But if it is dry, I think they could actually get away with, maybe one on each course for, through next weekend. And that's what they have. That's sort of their hope is to get to the second weekend in December if they can. It's not always possible, but bottom line is I don't think we're done with turf racing after today. I do think that there's a chance that, if they all didn't leave, that they can squeeze in another couple of turf races next week.
Excellent. Dave, we've got, I didn't look much other than to look at the overnight, but you got the two Stallion Series races, and you've got the Garland of Roses on Sunday.
Yeah, and we actually did get a Breeders' Cup horse for the Stallion Stakes, Dreamer's Disease. I think that horse ran and participated in the Breeders' Cup race, right? He's by, you know, over-under, I didn't really look at this. I'm going to say over-under on Leo Bands in these two races. I'll set it 7.5. There's 24 horses entered, and I'm sure that, let's see, I'm looking at the boy race here. Let's see how many Leo Bands. One, two, which is Farmer's Disease. Jacobus 3 and Uno is 4. So yes, 4 out of the 12 are Leo Band. And look, Dreamer's Disease, it's very rare you see a horse go from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile to the, the Staten Island or whatever, whatever they call this. And I would think that he would be, given the fact that his Keeneland allowance race was a one turn race. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a two turn mile. Sorry, my bad. But he didn't run terrible in the Breeders' Cup. He set the pace and, probably helped out his stablemate who came back and won, keep me in mind. So he'll be awful tough in there. And so that's what we said, 4, right? Let's go. Let me take a quick turn the page here. Let's go to the Philly race. And
there's
two. The Leo Bands are in there. Just two. Oh, so it's under. I'm Russell. Joe's a hot mess. And who's the other one there? Leo Bond and a Prayer, who's probably going to be the favorite. And enough to made it a miss. So I said if it's 7.5, it was under. You'd already gotten that. You've got a nice wager in there. $250,000 for these horses is a little bit much, but hey, why not? It's a good two good size fields, but I think you're going to have two strong favorites that are going to, again, Leo Bannon Prayer, Danny Velasquez. We talked about him with Brooklyn Strong on Saturday's card. His first two stakes winners came on the October 24th card, back to back races with those two horses, and Leo Bannon of Prayer was, very impressive in the one-turn mile, and should be, I would imagine, equally as impressive with a nice outside draw in this race on Sunday. Wayne Potts has one coming from turf to the dirt by War Dancer. What else is in there? He also has another one, Miss Wicked, coming from synthetic. Clement's Philly on the rail there. Did win on a wet track, did beat a next out winner. Not sure he's thrilled with the rail, and I think he wants to go further with his horse, but why not still a one-turn race? And I guess the interesting thing for the weekend, something we have, Chris Croft Clement and Kendrick Carmouche are both looking for their first New York titles at a meet. I think Clement's fate will probably be determined tomorrow based on how good of a day Todd has, because he's got the live runners in 3 of the stakes and a couple other races. I don't know where Christoph's next winner, if he does have a next winner, comes from for this last 3 days. But he has not yet won a Naira meet title, but has a chance to do it. And Carmouche, parlaying the very strong opening weekend, Breeders' Cup weekend here, still has a 3-win lead over Cancel, by the way, who's out. He's taking days this weekend. So he's got 4 over Rosario, who is going to ride here through the weekend, and I believe through next weekend as well. It's been announced that he's going to go ride in California for the winter, but I think he's going to stay here for another week, at least maybe till the break, too. We get a nice little 10-day break. But I know he's going to ride here at least through next weekend before taking a little time before he heads out west.
Finally, Dave, before we go, one story that I have not touched on that came out last week, essentially, or over the weekend, the Thanksgiving weekend, the story involving Jimmy Toner and the move to Fair Hill. It's notable that somebody like Jimmy Toner, who, at this stage of his career particularly, would pick up stakes and, drop down in Maryland.
He had talked to me about this about a year ago, that he was thinking about doing it. There was was it a year ago now, maybe two, that I wrote a story about some trainers that were leaving, very concerned about the high cost of living and doing business in New York with workers' comp and just everything, and just living in New York and the labor board. And he had mentioned to me that he was thinking about doing it last year, I think. And another reason, in addition to the cost of doing business and everything, is his daughter, Catherine, is in D.C. She's an immigration attorney in D.C., and he wants to be closer to her, more easier access to get from basically Northeast Maryland to D.C. Nicholson, right? A.J. Suited Racing, they have a barn at Fair Hill, so he's going to be able to use stalls there because all those barns are either leased or purchased by the trainers or owners who have been there. And what a great place! I went there about a month ago. See Graham, and I went there 2 mornings in a row. Just a great place for a horse. I mean, I think if I was a horse, I'd want to be a Fairhill, to be honest with you. It's just a beautiful facility there, and a more relaxed scenario there for those horsemen and horses. So, yeah, he said he's been here since 1973, and he's got it's a mark of a good horseman when you have four stakes named after horses you trained, and I believe he's got four stakes named after horses he's trained, which is a pretty good indelible mark there.
Wow, and he and Catherine, one of the most popular couples on the racetrack and in town, and I guess this means they're selling the house in Valley Stream.
I would assume so. Yeah, would assume that no reason that if he needs to ship into New York, he can. He's got that nice Philly season that won at Saratoga first out, and then I think they tried her in the stake up at Canada. Didn't run as well, and I just think I remember talking to him after that. They put her away, let her mature a little bit. I think mentally she wasn't, ready to tackle the upper echelon. So, he'll be in Florida first, and train down there and get her started training, and maybe get a race, and then I could see that horse potentially coming back to New York for one of those races, the series of races we have for the 3-year-old fillies.
Yeah, one of the top horsemen for this long in the game, and it's that familiar orange, that orange cloths and saddle pads and stable signs and Jimmy Toner. All right. Dave, I appreciate it, and should be an interesting few days, and I'm hoping to get down there during the week. We've been waiting to get our 2-year-old colt in, Scherzando, and hopefully Thursday. So
very well. And
good to see you soon.
This is usually our typical year-end conversation because there's nothing much happening in New York until Gotham. So I wish you and your family and your listeners a joyous holiday season.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig. And Dave getting ready for the winter season through Aqueduct and the big card Saturday, and looking forward to it, even if the weather is inclement. We're going to stay right here. We've got about half an hour. In fact, we're right at the bottom of the half hour. And James Scully standing by. Get some handicapping in with Scully. Then Hammer's going to swing through. Then we'll do some more capping, too, with Nick Tamaro, plus Dave's colleagues, Mike Welsh and Steve Anderson, all coming up here in the second half. And say good morning, James Scully.
Good morning, Steve.
James, this worked out well because we couldn't get to you in hour one, so good to connect now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a miserable morning here in Lexington, cold and rainy and overcast, but sounds like that exact same weather is going to hit Aqueduct tomorrow, so unfortunately for that card. But all the graded stakes are on the main track, and I hated to hear that about Friends Fire and Mind Control possibly coming out of the Cigar Mile, though.
Yeah, I know. That would diminish the action, but we'll see. Watching, have to be on our toes a little bit. Before we talk any handicapping and the weekend, let's get a little bit from last week and the weekend. From your vantage point, the 2-year-old card on Saturday, plus, of course, the change of venue moved up to Turfway. We got a couple of cards in. How about some thoughts about what we saw last weekend and how you're approaching, this kind of seasonal shift?
Sure. Yeah. Last weekend we had two 2-year-old stakes, Goldenrod, Kentucky Jockey Club at Churchill Downs. The Travel Column, who won the Goldenrod, was more impressive than Keep Me in Mind, who won the Kentucky Jockey Club. Really, I thought a big effort, her third start. She won on Oaks Day in pretty sharp form by a couple lengths, was a front running victory. Frosted Filly, and she came back. Her second start was in Alcibiades. I didn't think she got out of the gate very well. She just sort of ran evenly around the track that day. So, you know, Cox gave up any thoughts of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies after that performance, pointed her to the Goldenrod. She, once again, didn't get out of the gate that fast. That just doesn't break that well, or hasn't so far in the last two starts. Got squeezed a little bit, was way off the pace, started making up ground near the end of the far turn, and then she ran right into traffic, you know, saving ground along the inside. She altered course out, and really it was a tough beat for the runner-up, really ran a big race, but Travel Column looked good. I thought Keep Me in Mind, really, you know, he grinded it out. Smiley Sabaka almost stole that race on the lead, and, you know, he's a nice horse. This race didn't come back very fast, but I'm not too concerned about that. I look at a horse like Keep Me in Mind. He's obviously going to have to improve next year as a three-year-old, but it's possible. I do like a horse like that that shows some class at two, and perhaps he isn't the fastest in his crop, but they have the potential to get faster as a three-year-old. I wouldn't dismiss his chances. And the other main thing last weekend as far as just the Derby goes was the first pool of the Kentucky Derby future wager. Life is Good got bet down. Game winner was 5-1 a couple years ago after the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Philly Juvenile win in Pool 1, and that's the shortest price in the seven-year history of the pool. Life is Good closed at that same price. Obviously, you know, he ran blazing fast. If you watch his debut win, Steve, he was just like, you know, he was determined, you know, all speed. But he certainly looks the part. He's a big, good-looking colt. His female family is like Distorted Humor, Mind Shaft, Dixie Lamban, Miss Walkie. There's all this stamina in his female family. So with Bob Baffert running him, orchestrating his three-year-old campaign, he just looks like he could be any kind. I think 5-1 is too short to take on any horse in November, but I could definitely understand why people gravitated that Life is Good like they did.
I guess. I mean, you know, certainly on a horse that's going to have to, you know, have a similar trajectory to Authentic to be successful next spring. At least with Authentic, you got 50-1 last year at Authentic, though.
Right, exactly. But I will say this, you know, to me, Nadal, you look at him, he came along last year, now he got hurt. But his first two races, to me, didn't look like there was any chance in the world he was going to rate. And by the time he got to that Arkansas Derby, you know, he was sitting just off the speed in third. So you're right about Authentic. His only two career losses came when he did make the lead in the San Anita Derby and in the Preakness. I would define him as a need-to-lead type for sure. But I wouldn't dismiss Life is Good for in terms of perhaps being a little bit tractable going forward.
Let's. I was going to say I was going to move on, but I will ask. I'll ask ask you the same question I asked Steve Haskin yesterday. The non-stakes. Anybody from the non-stakes that, you know, that deserves some attention, some follow-up?
You know, I, not right offhand. I mean, I took a look at them a little bit. You know, I came away, with that Mandaloon. Obviously,
yep.
That horse
yep.
looked fantastic. I really, you know, you look at his pedigree too, because I remember when he broke his maiden at Keeneland. I think it was in the last race on like a Saturday card. Or Friday, Saturday, and he has all this turf breeding in his female family, you know, being by in the Mischief, but he's out of an Empire Maker mare, and he just looks like the part of like a two-turn type. I thought he improved off that debut, looked really sharp, winning that 7-furlong allowance. So he's a type, you know, Brad Cox has essential quality and Caddo River, but Mandaloon really gives him another talented prospect heading into 2021, Steve.
Speaking of Brad Cox, you make me remind me to mention, because I didn't do it earlier in the show, it was Set Piece last night in that allowance, which, you know, 5-2 actually seemed like a fair enough price, I guess. 7-20 to win. Got a nice effort from Busy Channel, who I'm a fan of, and Busy Channel.
Well, he was on the front end. Yeah, he ran a good race. Yeah,
yes, he did, and was close to 8-1, and Column Road ended up. Third in here. Ritzy AP was a good fourth to close out the super. Mr. Misunderstood didn't run badly. He was second choice, 7-2, ended up beating about three lengths. Obviously, they're going to have to make some decisions about, you know, where he stands. You know, it seems like the clock might be striking midnight for Mr. Misunderstood a little bit, but this was the right level. You know, this is a 40, the purse was 39,000 allowance, optional claiming type group, and set piece, the Judmont homebred. And
really nice cards there, the this opening weekend for Floyd yep. Park, you know, the last two nights. Talamo won a couple races yesterday, a really good jockey colony there for at least December. So, yeah, there's. I took a look at both those cards. I looked at tonight a little bit, and I looked at tomorrow's card. I can give you a couple horses there at Turfway. As far as just like shifting course, yeah, that's one thing. I'm like the last two nights, I've just watched a bunch of races from Turfway, just sort of trying to get a feel for it. Sort of similar to the fairgrounds. I watched a few races there yesterday, but I'm just trying to scout it out and. You know, at least with the Churchill horses or even Keeneland, I've got a good feel for those horses, but you get these horses coming in from all over the place. I mean, one thing about Turfway is, I mean, they're just like carding like eight races a day. And, you know, they're huge fields and they're pretty competitive with fairgrounds. One element about fairgrounds is those Louisiana bred races. Those are really just hard to decipher. Don't have any feel for those. So when I'm looking at their cards, a lot of times, Steve, I'm focusing on races that aren't Louisiana bred.
Well, and we've been interested too. We had Chip Bach on Tuesday to introduce the Turfway season. Ed was with us on Wednesday, and we looked at a couple of spots and. I watched yesterday the Indiana. I can tell you one thing: the having been tied on for Indiana this season, it's a real benefit because the Indiana horses are going to be. It looks like quite a few are going to be Turfway dotting the landscape. Yeah,
I've got an Indiana Grand horse I like at double digit odds in the morning line. Four of the 16 races so far at Turfway have been won by Indiana Grand shippers. You got Deshaun Parker there, who's riding well. They're leading jockeys. So, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Those horses so far are faring well.
Let me also mention from yesterday before we get some plays from James. That race that it's kind of fun. Yesterday, Rich Eng and I, at the end of the show, we latched on to that eighth race. We had both looked at it, and that on the couch, who we liked, 5-1. And the combination of, you know, Rich and I, he liked Dan Fusey from the rail, who actually took a bunch of money, ended up going off at under 2-1. And they run 1-2 and did okay here. On the couch paid 1180. This was the George Duarte with Johnny for Rich Santulli, Colts Neck. So got a little pop yesterday at Aqueduct, just kind of, you know, some spot plays. James, what are we looking at for the weekend?
All right, well, I'll give some thoughts real quick on the claiming card, if that's
okay.
All right. I got a few spots picked out. Race number six, I'll start with that. That's the Jewel, a mile and an eighth race for three and up, 150 grand. You know, this race has Jesus' team. He's going to be he's the big favorite on the morning line, going to take a lot of action. He's a confirmed closer. Not a lot of pace in here. I gave Treasure Trove a little bit of a look. He's got the tactical foot. Mike Maker and Tyler Gaffleone. I'm looking for some horses to play on their part, especially horses that perhaps didn't compete at Churchill. There's a couple that I like tomorrow that didn't. But I landed on Dan Janiels, Steve. I thought that effort two starts back was really an improvement from him when he beat Crypto Cash. Crypto Cash was running in the Arkansas Derby this spring. He was claimed out of that race. Dak Janiels beat him by a neck, got a career best speed rating that day. Came back in that grade two race on the Breeders' Cup Friday undercard. He was out on the front end with Signal Man and Pliska Parfait.
Ding Dong and out there, the three of them in the opening stages. Those horses weakened and finished up the track. Dak Daniels surged a clear lead in upper mid-stretch and got run down by two closers. That Rocketry went last the first, the runner-up, but he still was three lengths clear of third. I don't see a lot of pace in here. I think, you know, Sisterson has come back and worked him twice. He worked him five furlongs in preparation for this. I just think he's in career best form. He's going to run a big race in this Jewel Stakes.
All right.
And then the other two, they're not going to be really big prices, but I'm just going to lean upon them a little bit as well from like a multi-race perspective. In race seven in that Emerald at a mile 16th on turf, I do like Temple. Maker Gaglione, horse that loves Gulfstream. Really, you know, I thought he was like, after he left Gulfstream in the summer, I thought Maker sort of carefully handled him a little bit in those last two races. But those last two races provide fitness. He's coming back here. I think he's going to run a big race. And the other one I liked a little bit was in race number 10, the Canterbury Stakes, five furlongs on turf. This number one, Faya, might be the goods, but he's drawn inside. There's some other speed in there. Number five, Tiger Blood, has caught soft turf in his last three starts. You know, he's 8 for 10 over the course, so he might not be 6 to 1, but I just see him getting a Catbird type trip, and you know, just the turf is just going to benefit him a bunch. I think the being firm ground there, he firmed a good ground. He can even run well on good ground. So I look for Tiger Blood to run a big race in the 10th race at Gulfstream.
There's a big, speaking of Tiger Blood, I saw quite a story from Florida with one of the Carol Baskin Tigers almost killed a woman, a volunteer. Did you see this yesterday?
I saw it on the news this morning, as a matter of fact. Yeah, mauled a handler.
Unbelievable.
Like a job.
Yes.
She was not dancing on the stars.
Well, one of the great early days of the pandemic was, of course, the whole Tiger King nonsense that gripped America.
I only got through two of them. I wasn't too keen on it.
we watched the whole thing. We loved it. That's pretty funny. We enjoyed it.
It could have been a documentary, the way I like something like that. It just, like, you make you wonder. I mean, I know it wasn't staged, but it seems like it's staged because everybody's so ridiculous. But
I don't know what. Maybe I saw Tiger Blood, and it made me the connection of Tiger and what was obviously a disaster yesterday. that was morbid. Sorry. What else?
Okay. I got a couple of Turfway Park on Saturday, Steve. Race number four. One thing I'm looking for at Turfway are these horses that have, like, form over the track, or at least all-weather track form.
Sure.
I look at this number two and race number four, Momenta Cat, 15-1 on the morning line at Blinkers. I like her last two starts over the track. Her last time she ran at Turfway, she ran a half length third back in March. And her last three races, you know, her form's pretty solid. You know, it ran a well-beaten third, and then her last two races, she's run third and second. I just think, you know, she's been gearing towards a return to this place, and those two efforts stamp her contender in a really wide-open race. And,
all right.
And then my other one is in the feature, race number seven. Number seven, Hurricane Highway, in there is 10-1 on the morning line. This four-year-old quality road gelding, you know, raced last year. He won 2 of 7 starts last year. He's 3 for 6 on all weather. His last start on an all weather track, his first race back in July, Ravelli ran him for a tag. He was immediately claimed out of that race by Cipriano Contreras. It was a 2.5 length win at Arlington Park. His last three races, he didn't run any good at Kentucky Downs. It gets much better. But his last two races at Indiana Grand are really solid. He's coming back into good form.
He broke his maiden by 9 lengths on all weather. Like I said, he loves all weather tracks. Hurricane Highway does. He's that Indiana shipper for Cipriano Contreras. It's a good form. And 10 to 1 on the morning line, I'd love to get a price in that range.
Nice. Did you look, while we're on the Turfway topic, it'll probably be the last chance to discuss it. Did you look at the stake tonight?
No, I didn't really look at it too closely. I sort of glanced, but I didn't really look at it.
All right, I don't know if Artie's Princess is seven to five. I'm just wondering if
Yeah, it looked pretty formidable, I guess, in there. Though, yeah. Coming off those Woodbine races, those are pretty good efforts up there. So, yeah, I gave it a quick glance, but I just didn't really know, if I could beat that filly. So.
All right.
It's interesting, though. Wesley Ward has two in there, and it always makes me wonder a little bit: is that Cambria actually going to run? But if she does, that last effort, in a sense, was her first race of the year. I mean, she could improve upon it significantly. So, he looks to have a pretty strong hand in there.
And I'll try to look at it before we get off the air. James Scully, everybody. James_Scully111 and the team, of course, at Twin Spires and the Twin Spires blog roll and everything, all the Brisnet teams. There's been a nice steady supply of info. Do you have an NFL play for Sunday?
I do. I like teams grabbing points at home. They have everything to play for. Arizona Cardinals over the Los Angeles Rams. This is a playoff game for the Cardinals. They're done if they lose. And Jared Goff has 10 turnovers in the last 4 games. He has become a turnover machine. Arizona beats the Rams on Sunday, Steve.
There we go. There's Scully laying it out. And good luck this weekend. Talk next week. James Scully and standing by his hammer. And even though Hammer's not watching, I tell you what, if the Steelers keep up with this, the Hammer's going to just not watch them at all. They continue to win, and they're doing it somehow without you. Good morning.
Good morning. I just caught the tail end of that, but I assume you're talking about the Steelers. Yeah, I get a lot of emails from friends and all that, and somebody asked me the other day what I thought about Tomlin, because I'm not a big Tomlin fan. I said, can't comment, I haven't watched a game all year, so pretty wild. I was just talking to a buddy of mine the other day about it, and it was Sunday, and, for Sundays for the last, since they've been 5 years old, was football in the fall, and haven't missed it one bit. It's pretty wild. I mean, just cold turkey, and so we'll see what happens, but yeah, just not been watching any sports, but We wish Ben and the crew all the luck in the world, and we'll see. If they get any further along into the playoffs, maybe we'll turn it on. But anyway, been watching horse racing though, a lot of that, so that's been cool. I'm glad you had Tony on this morning, Tony Alivato, to talk about the show and of all the people in the industry. I don't know Tony that well. We've met a few times, of course. How you doing? Had a beer or two along the lines, but it was a perfect. There was a gap there, and he and the crew there fit it perfectly with the Fox show. A daily type of thing, and I think being on TV with a lot of the personalities that they had, and it just had a great mix, all likable, ish people. And I think a lot of the fans got to see them as opposed to just hear them maybe. And, it was always a good show. I mean, I have the Roberts thing, so didn't watch it as much, but you know what? I did flip over to see it because I just liked the people and I liked the pieces and how calm they were, flipping back and forth, not arguing with each other, trying to out-select or outdo each other in any way, and really trying to teach the audience a little bit more about the game. So, I'm glad you had Tony on so he could, take a bow and thank all his people. But, it's kind of wild. All the time I was here, at Santa Anita, I wondered why we just didn't have anything like that out here in television land when we have all the opportunity and all the gadgets and, for years and years and years. I'm talking 15 years ago. Why don't we have some super show out here? Some really cool little something going on, but it just never materialized. And I'm glad they did that. I think the whole country enjoyed it. Put it this way, it's tough to hear a bad word about that show as it was, you know. And anyway, I'm glad you had him on.
Too few and far between. I at Saratoga, I think we had, I guess it was two summers ago, we started the season and had Tony either opening day or opening weekend, and then haven't had a chance since. So this was perfect with tomorrow's Cigar Mile card. And I do want to mention, I'll probably mention it again with Nick Tamaro next, but you have until 5 o'clock this afternoon, 5 p.m. cutoff, to sign up. Naira Betts Players, $500 Cigar Mile Challenge. There's two NHC seats available. And, of course, also today, actually yesterday, was the start of this NHC Winter Challenge, kind of an intercession, December, January, because I mentioned this on Wednesday, the cutoff continues to be, you know, the end of January. Just because we're not playing NHC until August doesn't mean we're going to keep qualifying for this year's NHC. It's going to end like it always does in January. So we got a nice sort of mini tournament winter challenge right here now until late January, and it started yesterday, and two seats tomorrow in the Naira Betts exclusive, $500, 5 o'clock today, folks. So thanks, wanted to get that in.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think Horse Tourneys has some tournaments still. I see some feeders going into that.
Oh yeah,
snooping around that. So there are opportunities to go, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was going to ask when the deadline was. So January 31st is the deadline for the August contest, correct?
I think it's the 20, the previous Sunday, the 23rd. January 23rd will be the cutoff. January 23rd, 2021. And then, of course, we're going to be at Bally's August 27th to 29th. And this winter challenge, top five finishers, there's going to be a $10,000 assortment of prizes, $4,000, $2,500, $2,500. A separate 75-person leaderboard just for this winter challenge. And these will be for people that have not already qualified for NHC. So this is going to be a terrific run over these next, you know, 7 weeks, opportunity to get to Vegas for the 21 season. And then essentially we will start the 22 qualifiers the week of January 25th, right after this ends.
Great. Yeah, that's good, because got to keep those contests going. I'm really enjoying them. Let's see, we had Del Mar ended last weekend, and probably we talked about it on Friday, and I think probably the best four consecutive days of racing in Southern California in a long time. Finished up the meet there, including the seven graded stakes, and we were right about one thing, Steve, that all the stakes were going to be won by out of towners, and not necessarily a couple of the trainers, but all the horses that won the stakes made their last start out of California, and Chad Brown won the bulk of them. But good races, and maybe this will start something. Maybe California, maybe the racing here finally hit bottom, and things are turning around. And another thing we mentioned was LoSal, and right before we were on Friday, and I think earlier in the week I'd gotten a call from Steve Miotti, who was a longtime California trainer here, and he's a friend, so we were telling stories, and he said, "Boy, they're going to have a good meet there at LoSal." And I'm thinking, "What are you talking about?" And he mentioned the closure of Golden Gate. He goes, "You're kidding me? Those guys got nowhere to run. They're going to be coming down." And we briefly mentioned that last week, and boy, has it shown. And let's remember that Los Al, they didn't get their shot in September, which they normally do after the summer Del Mar meet. They usually run for a couple weeks there, and Santa Anita took their dates and ended up not even running. So they lost the chance there. So they're coming back here with, I think, a three-week run. And the fact that Golden Gate is not running, and now we just heard yesterday, right, that they will not open up again or attempt to open up again on December 26th, which is opening day, obviously, at Santa Anita, too. So we'll have the dual opening, hopefully. But we're in another lockdown here, so to speak. We've gone back to, stay-at-home orders, except for the politicians. Of course, they can go out and eat, which always catch them the day after the announcement. But, no, seriously, we're here. We've stopped all restaurant stuff, only takeout, and you can't play golf. It was funny. We had a golf date this past week, and the only way they're allowing you to golf is that you're golfing with four. The foursome has to all be in the same household, which is that ain't happening. So can't even get outside to play golf. So you know what? If that's what it takes, fine. And everywhere I go, people are doing the right thing. So
yeah,
if that's what it takes, if that's seriously, I haven't been anywhere where I haven't seen people with masks on or arguing. I'm not wearing a mask or. Even on hiking trails, I take a mask, and if I see people wearing them, I put it on. I don't care. So I think people are doing the right thing, and if it's, I think we agree that this is what it takes, then, we're going to do it. So hopefully things will get back in order, and hopefully they, Orange County is where Los Alamitos is, so it's not the same as L.A. County. So they have it's a little bit not as quite as stringent there, but I'm hoping that they can get this meet in and we can get back. But I just looked at the first two overnights, and I glanced at the third there at Los Alamitos. I mean, it's stocked with horses, and there a lot of the Golden Gate horses fit the conditions of the Los Alamitos condition book, and the horses are allowed to ship, but the people aren't allowed to ship with them, but they're sending them down here. And I looked up the first couple days. And on the first day, of the 80 horses that I see that are in, 43 of them are not stable at Santa Anita, meaning they're stable either at Los Alamitos or Golden Gate Fields. And on the next day, 46 of the 85, so over 50% of the horses entered are not Santa Anita, San Luis Rey, quote, the horses. They're either stable at Los Al or they're at Golden Gate Fields. So the fields are big. And I think I read somewhere that there's 34 different jocks on opening day named to ride a horse. I didn't add that up, but that's pretty crazy. So, in your look of places to play this weekend, check out Los Alamitos. The first 3 days are pretty good. They're big fields, which they're really not accustomed to race after race here. So. Good for Bob Marino. I'm sure him and his crew are glad to have that, but a welcome change here. The old supply and demand works again.
No, I was excited to enjoy connecting, I'll reiterate, and you have said it too. I mean, anytime this topic comes up, Doc Allred has answered every call and every need. Seems to get kind of short shrift and treated shabbily. But every time there's been a problem, Doc Allred has stepped up, and supporting Los Al is a way to show appreciation.
Absolutely. Doc Allred, Doc Allred's the owner and owns Los Alamitos. And you couldn't have said it better, Steve. Anytime that he runs the quarter horse show there, has been there for years, and is an avid horseman, has quarter horses. And when the thoroughbred community here needed help, and no matter what, he has stepped up. And he hasn't really been shown the love that he should have been from at least some of the people here. But this is a good way to come say thank you. Bet on the card. But like I said, hopefully this is a turnaround. There's some changes at Santa Anita over the last week or so. Hopefully that helps and things turn around and and can get back on the right swing after a couple of years of hanging around the bottom. But anyway, one of the races here over the weekend, kind of we were talking about the scheduling. The Starlet comes up here, and then the Futurity is down the road a little bit. So a little quick back from not necessarily from the Breeders' Cup, but from a prep race they had earlier at Del Mar. But the winner of that race, Astute, comes back for Richard Mandela, and was one of those races and fillies that you saw, and it was visually impressive. And they're going against another one of the visually impressive fillies that's been running, Princess Noor, who ran up against him in the Breeders' Cup, and the figures said no, and the figures were right. But she didn't get disgraced. She just didn't win. And she comes back here trying to avenge her first defeat in the Breeders' Cup. But Bob Baffert's won this race the last 3 years, not quite as dominating as the Futurity, but he's won it the last 3 years. And interestingly enough, Graydon Van Dyke has won on all three of those Bass, chasing yesterday in Dreamtree, and Van Dyke's on Barda. As you see, Baffert has three in here, and Princess Noor being the one. And on paper, it looks like a battle between those two, Princess Noor and Astute. And I just look back, interestingly enough, this race has been run here at Los Alamitos since 2014, and the first winner there was Take Charge Brandy. And you remember her, that was Lucas, and was fresh off a 60-1 Breeders' Cup upset with her, and I think actually solidified her championship when she ended up winning this race, the Starlet win this in 2014, the first running.
Well, she also, though, you're forgetting one sidebar.
Delta.
She won the Jack. Yeah, she went. She won the Princess.
Yeah, won a Delta in the middle, and then this one, I think they were looking for another graded, and this was a grade one. And I think Wayne's not afraid to run, that's for sure, and win here. And I do think those last two races after the Breeders' Cup solidified her. She did win the Eclipse, didn't she? Yeah, she won the Eclipse that year, but solidified that. So a little bit of history here. Like I said, Bob does well in these races. And one thing I wanted to throw in a little sidebar, as you look at this race, there's five horses, which is unfortunately more common than not out here in some of these two-year-old races. Three Bob Bafferts, you got a Michael McCarthy, and a Richard Mandela. And which is one of the problems just in general with the two-year-olds out here when you don't have a whole lot of them. You break your maiden as a two-year-old, a lot of nice horses break their maidens out here, and in a different place, a lot of these nice horses would move on and maybe run in a stake the next time and see what happens. But just if you're lucky enough to break your maiden and you're not a top horse, there's not a lot of allowance opportunities here. So if you're not a top horse and you break your maiden out here, there's not a lot of other guys like you. So you have to run, or you're forced to run in a stake in your next start. And like I said, that's good for some of the good ones that are going to do that anyway. But if you just have a nice horse, it's tough to develop a two-year-old and it's going through the allowance racket, going there and trying to win a nice allowance race and then, maybe running a small stake and move on that way. So, It's the program hurts because it's a long term. It's not just that. When people stop sending those 2 year olds out here to run in this, you lose them the first year as 2 year olds. But then those horses are not there when they were going to be three, and they're not there when they're going to be four. And that's where a cycle is going on out here in California, where a few years ago people stopped sending as many 2 year olds as they did. So you notice it the first year, but then that second and third year, you miss those horses because you don't see them as they would have run on your circuit as three and four. So I don't know what can be done, but like I said, the good ones are, it's great. But if you have that, you know, nice horse, this is not a place to run. I mean, you looked at the day they had at Churchill, what was it, 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago with the all 2-year-old races. I mean, you know, you see that from out here and you go, there's no way in a million years you could run a race, you know, a card like that here. They're just not here. And so, you know, opportunity, we talk about opportunity to run sometimes means more than purse money. But, you know, when you keep seeing these smaller fields, I just think back of that cycle and I don't know what can be done. You know, we've tried things like limiting maiden races to, you know, sale prices, and we've tried that here and it's been done other places. It just doesn't seem to work. But anyway, the horse shortage, it shows here in the 2-year-old division.
Hey, agree. Yeah, it's they're not alone, of course, in this. I mean, we've got the Demoiselle ended up with a nice field. We got 5 in the boys' race. You got the juvenile. You got those juvenile stakes at Tampa and at Maryland Breds as well. It's a weird, this year in particular, Hammer. It's a strange scenario because so many 2-year-olds were kind of gummed up and the sale, you know, the delay of a number of the, you know, 2-year-old in training sale season, you know, you didn't have horses in circulation like you would have. So some of that is a weird, it's just the seasonal difficulties this year contributing.
I agree with you. It's just this seems to have been a trend. And speaking of 2-year-olds, I wanted to just throw out the kid, the 2-year-old King Place location is now no longer Calder, of course. You know, ran his last race, but that used to be the place for the 2-year-olds where they used to come out of. And they would, you know, make a start or two under some unknown trainer and then get transferred up north and, you know, become stars. And, Calder, I didn't even know what Calder was except CRC on the program until I went back east and then was asked to come down and work at Gulfstream in the 90s. And because my man Bobby Humphrey was down there and he worked at Gulfstream and I went to work there, but he'd always get there a little early and have to go over to Calder to, you know, move papers or do some work. And what a cool little track that was.
Yep.
And the people that worked there, the racing office was just great. They all worked together, and it was most of the same crew that made the trip over to Gulfstream that I got to work with. Very, very, very cool. I mean, I'm very good friends with Bobby Humphrey, obviously, and I mean, to this day, 3333227 was the Calder's number, and I probably called it every day for, you know, 10 years.
Wow.
To talk to him. I mean, it's one of the few numbers that I, you know, as soon as I think of Calder, 800-333-3227, bingo, racing office, please. and, a lot of times down there and, going to see him. And, of course, I think the last race I did see down there was the January 1st, 2006 Tropical Park Derby that Barbaro won.
How about that?
And, yeah, they're down there. That's... Bobby's funeral was right near there, and we were down there, and that was the last race saw down there at Calder. But always, whenever Calder comes up, I always get a smile on my face, and just from going down there and seeing him. And it's funny, Jay Privin mentioned some of the horses coming out of there, and he mentioned Blind Luck. And I remember of all the times I remember it being at Del Mar, I think it was. When was that? 2008, 2009, 2007, 2008, 2009, something like that. Jerry Hollendorfer came in and asked for a race. And you got to understand, here's a guy that's won 8,000 races, and he may have asked me for 3 races in that whole time. He just, whatever's in the book, he runs. And he goes, I just bought this horse. I think she's going to be all right. Is there any guys can put up make a starter allowance race for this horse? And I'm thinking, huh? And I just remember that being because he doesn't run. I remember looking the horse up. She broke her maiden, I think, for 40. Ran one time, and broke her maiden for 40. And so it did that. Now, when is it 2? And at that time, I think it was 40. In other words, it two, if you broke your maiden for 40 or less and not didn't win two races. So we put the race up, and, you know, lo and behold, of course, she went off. I think the favorite won and then went on to go on. But I, it was just kind of like, huh? He bought this nice filly. I'm, you know, waiting for, like, hey, can you ride a two other than allowance race? And he asked for a starter allowance. But it was just, I just always remember that, and I'm just shaking my head. He knew what he had way back then when he when they first got her. So, but just one of many that that came out of that that Calder program for sure.
That's pretty funny. I'm just looking it up too. I just pulled the race up when Jay mentioned that the other day, I had forgotten that completely that she had started her career at Calder. She won that race July 29th, 2009 with Rosario, and she went off at 3-5, so she was not a secret at that point. And pretty funny. And among others in there, she beat Sam Special, Such Fortune, Lover's House, Ride Me to the Moon, Little Dodger, and Gail Schoonover. That was the field that she bested, and she paid, $320.
In that starter race?
In the starter race, yeah. Oh, and then, okay. But then she got beat in the debutante in her next start. She ran second in the debutante to Mi Sueno, which is, what's his name, which is
our,
Eric Guillo.
Louisiana friend, yes.
Guillo, Mi Sueno. She's gone on to be a nice broodmare. You know, by the way, since we're going to somehow juvenile fillies came back up, I want to go back to Take Charge Brandy. This is a point of contention with me. I did not vote for her. I voted for Lady Eli, who to me should have been the juvenile filly champion, and that at the very least was borne out later on. I never really, the Take Charge Brandy flurry of wins to me didn't eclipse what Lady Eli looked like.
What had she done at that point? She won a Breeders' Cup.
She was three. Yeah, she and I think she only, if I'm not mistaken, she was just 3-3, and you know, she hadn't run as much. But I certainly, obviously her career was unique. Oh, but cool. she had won the juvenile filly turf, and she had won the girls' turf race at Belmont, the prep, the Miss Grillo, and of course it had broken her maiden at Saratoga. But that's who I voted for. I mean,
I think that might have been one of the first years of the 2-year-old turf race. I'm not sure, but I think the thinking at that point was, if there's a horse with the equal number of wins and all that, they're going dirt at that point, and even probably still today, as far as that, you know, and that's probably where it came from. But I think that, you know, obviously the 60-1 stood out in the Breeders' Cup, and then the fact that if she didn't race after that, it'd probably been but the fact that she went back and ran two more times before the end of the year to say, hey, you know what, I want to win this title, and she won. And one of those races, the Starlet was a grade one, I think pushed her over the edge, for sure. That's what I'm thinking of is that. And I just remember that blind luck thing. It's crazy. We're going to officially open up the calendar thing next week. But I want to talk about that real quick. We're doing the Oaklawn calendar giveaway again this year, and we're going to go back to what we did 7-8 years ago. I'll give you the email where to send it in next week. But we're going to ask for a picture of your sleeping pet to send in for the calendar this year, and we'll announce that officially next week. But start taking pictures if you don't have a pet, and if you have a pet that doesn't sleep, just go, you know, take a picture of an animal. Any animal will take to send in, and we'll get that going. Like I said, we started. Ocon was gracious enough to step up and fill the gap, and we'll continue on with that. But we'll announce officially next week. We'll open it up, and so I don't get to Ocon until January, and so I won't get the calendars until I get there, and they won't be out until mid-January. So don't panic about that if you don't see a calendar by the end of the year. But we'll get that going. But,
cool.
Yeah. So we're happy to do that, and you know that's where we are out here. Anything else?
Outstanding. Now let me jump. I got quite a bit to. I got running okay. out of time. I got Hammer after you. I've got to get to Nick and Welsh and Steve Anderson.
Sounds great. Always a pleasure as we head into the holiday season. Everybody just do the right thing, stay safe, and keep the game going.
Hammer, I appreciate it. I did get a very good question from our friend John Fradkin. John asking next week when we get a chance, and gives you time to make the specifics. He wants to know, as a owner from a different region, about getting licensed and the mechanics of running in Arkansas. So that's an assignment for next week, all right?
Okay, got it. Done. We'll do it.
All right.
All right.
Here we go. Let's take a break, our last of the morning, and when we come back, the last 40 minutes, give or take, we got some quick opinions from Nick Tamaro, and then we'll get Mike Welch in here and Steve Anderson. Weekend preview at the races back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%.